Just for you, Nate. All right, we're at 302, and since Nate prodded me, we might as well get started. I know we've got several more that are registered and coming in, so please bear with me as I let them in. Anyway, thank you all for attending this year's annual conference. I'm very sorry we're not all in person, but things are progressing, so we're hoping to get there soon. But thank you all for attending. My name is Reese Brown. I'm the executive director of the Cross Country Ski Areas Association. I know just about everyone on the call, which is exciting, but there are some new participants. So we welcome both all of our members as well as anyone new to what we're doing. Certainly, I hope you all had a great year. It was quite unique. To give you just a little rundown on what KISS has been doing this year, we started with some Zoom meetings discussing kind of COVID protocols, kind of almost a year ago, just after a year ago, when everything kind of fell apart. And those proved really fascinating. We at this time last year, we weren't sure if we were going to have a season this year. And then, as we saw what was happening, with some of the outdoor sports, specifically cycling, hiking, and running, we realized that there could be a good opportunity for cross country. As we went through the summer, we really felt pretty confident, listening to some of the issues that Alpine was going to have and some of the other, more cumbersome, sports and activities. And then when we get to August, we started to see entry-level ski equipment fly off the shelves, something we haven't seen. I'm not sure if we've ever seen that before. So that was super exciting. And again, that pointed all towards what we thought was going to happen this year, meaning a rush of people into cross country as an alternative to Alpine and another reason to get outside. So those Zoom calls were really fascinating and just great to connect with so many members and really keep our community together. And so I encourage anyone who was not or did not make those a regular events to please do as we go forward. And we'll be announcing that schedule in the next couple of weeks. We also did a lot with media this year. We had an extensive media outreach. We realized that this was our year to really talk about cross-country skiing, that finally the media was listening more than they had in the past, and they were interested in telling the story. So we helped shape as many stories as we can, kind of moving away from how hard it is, quote unquote, according to so many, to more the lifestyle and how, what a great activity it is to do with family and friends and that sort of thing. We developed a really robust media list, which was super exciting. We added to that all season long. As soon as we saw any article come out on cross country that did not reference KISS or that we hadn't been in touch with, we reached out to them immediately to make sure that they knew we were here and what we were doing. So it was really quite exciting. And we were able to place a lot of our ski areas in media stories, a lot of our suppliers in media stories. Very exciting there. We also started a new research initiative. This was happening even before COVID, and something that I'd been working on for a couple of years. We had Kelly Davis, a 12-year research director for SIA, come on board to really delve into what's going on in the cross-country market. And we sent out several consumer surveys, ski area surveys, and retailer surveys to ask them how their season was going, how the season was shaping up. All of those, the results of those surveys are on the kissa.org website. So if you haven't had a chance to look through them, I highly encourage that you do. They're under the latest news tab, and there's a section for just research. We do right now have a consumer survey that is still open. We have over 1,400 respondents, almost 1,500 now, a number that's greater than double what we had expected. So that's really been fascinating to look at that data. And one of the questions that we asked there is, what is your go-to ski area? And that was an open-ended question for them to fill in the blank and then tell us why, what they liked about that ski area. So that's going to be some really interesting data for, I think, for many of you as we go forward. And I want to remind you that it's membership renewal time. So the renewals have gone out to almost all of you. If you didn't get it, let me know, or you can certainly go online. But that helps Kissa do the work that we do and keep these Zoom calls going, et cetera. Please also remember there's a silent auction along with this conference. It's open for the next 3 days. So please feel free to bid often and frequently. I will put the link in the chat a little later. Okay, so our topic for today is customer retention and engagement beyond the newsletter. We did have a Zoom call dedicated to retention through newsletter, and that was really interesting. But we wanted to take it one step further and look at what else you can do more programmatically. So that's what we'll be discussing today. Most of our Zoom calls have been a small panel. Small moderated panel. We'd like to change that with this call. On the bottom of your screen, there is a reactions and there's a raise hand button there. We'd love to make this interactive, just like we would if we were in person. So please feel free to utilize that raised hand function, and we'll get you to be able to ask questions live and direct as opposed to in the chat. Haven't run one of those yet, so we'll see how it goes. Looking forward to having some good back and forth discussion. We'll have a Q&A at the end, and then if anyone wants to stick around and talk a little further, we've got that water cooler conversation type time for the end of this call. We're hoping this call will be under 1.5 hours. Hopefully it'll be closer to the 1 hour, 1:10 for for what we've got programmed, and then questions after that. Please keep your mic muted unless you are talking, and that will help keep all of us from hearing your background noise. And just a quick note that we are planning to return to in-person meetings starting this fall. So we're excited for that. We're waiting to see just a little bit more with what happens in the next couple of weeks with vaccines, et cetera. So we hope to be doing that. Okay, I think that's it. With that said, I am going to share my screen and hopefully that will work and you'll be able to see my little presentation here. Can everyone see my screen?
Yep.
Anyone see? All right. Terrific. All right. So retention and customer engagement. This was a question that really popped up this summer when we were talking about this influx of new people and what we expect was going to happen. And immediately people said, well, how do we keep them coming back? And what do we do there? And so I put together just a short presentation of some tactics and some strategies in customer engagement. And then we will go to talking to a variety of different ski areas about what they are doing and what they are, you know, how they are handling this customer engagement element. If you look on the right of this slide, you'll see this little infographic. And what it's saying is that that your existing customer is far easier to sell and convince to bring back than a new customer. And I think this is all intuitive to many of us, but the statistics are pretty high, looking at 60 to 70% will come back versus your ability to reach out to a new group, which puts you in that 5 to 20% conversion rate. So really your customer who's already there is a great asset to you and a great ability to communicate with and convince them to come back. Customer retention, you know, is different than customer acquisition or lead generation. So bear that in mind. We're not talking about reaching out to new people here. We are talking about engaging with the customer that you have. Why is customer retention important? Well, it increases your bottom line. Those that have already come to your ski area have a familiarity with you already, and they're likely, hopefully, because they've had a good time, to stick with the sport. And coming back to your ski area is a great place to begin because they already know you. So super important to work with that customer, make sure that they do have a good time, and bring them back. How do you bring them back? That's really up to you. You've got to come up with ways to form a long-standing relationship with your customers and get them to become loyal to what your to your product and brand. Looking at some of those general strategies for retention. Hold on, I got someone coming in here. Looking for some of those strategies. Hope that's not on your screen. Sorry about that. Think about your customer. What do you actually know about them? What are they? Why are they coming to your ski area? Are you offering products that they're asking for? I think this is a big question as to your customer comes to your store. What do they do? What else are they participating in when they're there? What is their customer journey? Do they come into the store? This was obviously a unique year where a lot of our customers did not come into the store. And that was something that you were, that we were trying to keep them out perhaps and just get them right to the trails. But that's going to change, we hope, for next year. And so hopefully you'll be able to get them back in, and look at what products are you offering? Are they buying things from your store that you actually have? Are they asking for things that you don't have? Are you getting a lot of referrals? That's a really important one because that tells you that you're doing something right and that the customers that you do have are having a good time and are interested in sharing that with their friends and family. Really, it starts with getting off on the right foot or creating a really good first impression. And you can think of that this year from the parking lot. When they drove into your parking lot, did you have good signage telling them what was new and different this year? Did you tell them about that on your website? I know we talked about that earlier this summer, about communicating to your customer on your website through your, through your social, but also with your signage. Was that easy? Were they welcomed into your center? Was your center attractive? Was it clean? I know many of our ski areas did a lot of work, interior work this year to rearrange things so that that customer flow was much easier. And I'm assuming that many of those will stick around for next year. Did you talk to your customer? A really big piece. If you look at, any of those chain stores like The Gap or, pick any of them, they all do a really good job of engaging you when you walk in the door. Talking to you, anything I can do to help you, super important. We're going to talk a little bit about this later. Also, did you thank them for coming? When they returned their skis, did you say, oh, did you have a good time? Any problems? Would you like to come back? Did you send them a thank you email? Hope you had a great time today. Notice that this was your first time. We'd love to offer you some incentive to come back. All of those things are important. And again, it's part of that communication. And then analyze your value proposition. Why would someone choose your ski area over the one down the street? Something to think about. Maybe there isn't one down the street, but certainly people are used to driving around. So why are they choosing your ski area? Is it because of your programming? Is it because of your grooming? Is it because of your customer service per se? Is it because of your amazing rentals or some of your teachers? I think that's a really good thing to be thinking of now. Why did they come? Why are they coming back? And are you missing anything? Is there an opportunity there to add to your programming, to add to how you're handling your customer, to add to your communication strategy? Social responsibility stance. Do you have one? This is something that's really heating up right now. In many areas. And, we're seeing people take stances on diversity, stances on, on politics, unfortunately, stances on climate. What do you stand for? The youth of America now are really turned on by this and really looking at, what you stand for in making those decisions. So that's something to keep in mind, and also perceived value. What this says, perceived value is more important than your actual value. Okay, true. But what do people, again, what are they thinking about you? What do they see that you don't see? Or you, if you're looking at the same thing, what are they looking at that you're seeing in a different light? So again, something really interesting, I think, to consider. Where we go. Sorry. Keep going. Okay. Looking at, you know, this says reduce friction. You know, how simple is it for your customer to interact, for your customer to go through your ticketing process, your rental process, your retail process, your online process? You know, I always think of Amazon here. And I think probably all of us have shopped at Amazon, but they make it about as simple as possible to shop. And they do that so that you go back and back because it is simple. I think of my frequent flyer or my frequent stay hotels. They've got my credit card. They've got all my information. For me to book something is super simple. I don't have to put in my information. I don't even have to tell them who I am because they already know that. So is your system like that? Are you providing systems like that? I know we talked about this online earlier this summer and how, you know, we do want to keep our people coming through our retail shop so that they can buy hats and gloves. But can they, you know, is there a way for them to purchase online and pick up inside? Is there a way for them to purchase their rentals online, but still come in and get them? So I think there are really good ways to utilize some of that technology, but also keep them in your shop, keep them coming through your shop. You know, think about those obstacles. And again, from your parking lot, was it seamless? Oh yeah, I know what to do now that I'm here because the signs have explicitly told me. Again, unique for this year, and hopefully that won't be the case next year. The rental process. We talked extensively this summer about how to retool your rental, your on-site rental process. I think we came up with some great ideas. We stole some great ideas from Alpine. But again, in terms of making it seamless and easy for that customer to get through that rental program, for many of them, it's the first time they've ever done it, and it's new and unique. And then the food and beverage, something that I, you know, we've talked about for years. Again, this was not a good year for food and beverage. But think about that going into next year. You know, can you get a cup of coffee there when you're putting on your boots if you're inside? Can you get a little snack? You know, can you easily get water when you're done after an afternoon ski? Can you hang out with your friends and have a beer or have another cup of coffee? You know, those sorts of things take that ski experience and make it more of a lifestyle experience. And again, another reason to come back to your ski area versus the one down the street or across town or where have you. And then communicate and engage. You know, we talk about communication through the newsletter. You certainly are communicating one-on-one, but we're now into spring. You know, have you reached out to your customers and talked about, you know, ski prep for summer? Have you invited them back to your repair shop because you have a great technician that can prepare their skis? Have you talked about summer activities at your ski area? Have you talked about, you know, staying in shape for cross-country skiing? Anything that you can continue to communicate with them. It says here, similar to friends, if you don't communicate with them, your relationship deteriorates. And I think that's true with our ski areas. Don't hibernate for the next, you know, 6 to 9 months, but keep that communication going. You know, look at the communication you get in the morning every time you turn on your computer. You know, who are those companies that you have not unsubscribed from, and why have you not unsubscribed? How many times have you actually bought something from that online vendor because they sent you that email today and you opened it and you're like, oh yeah, okay, I'm going to get that. You know, our business can be very similar. They may not be purchasing right now, but you want to continue to engage them throughout the summer. It doesn't have to be every day. It doesn't have to be weekly. It could be monthly, whatever's comfortable for you. But consider that, because keeping your product, your ski area, your retail store, everything that you offer top of mind is super important, regardless of what season it is. And then create a loyalty program. You know, is this something that that you're doing? And it doesn't have to mean discounts. You know, our industry has discounted for many years. That's not necessarily the best, but it could be a bring a friend offer. It could be somebody coming in for a lesson. You know, first time skier, they've come here, they had a lesson. It's like, great. As they leave, give them a 2-for-1 card. You know, all right, come back and take and book one more lesson. We'll give you the third lesson for free. They're still going to rent and they're still going to purchase a trail pass, but you're giving them a little bit of incentive. You're kind of making them feel like an insider almost. So again, think of what else you can do to keep that customer coming back. And I think the key thing here is just to sum it up is understand your customer. You know, are they families? Are they fitness singles? Are they older? Are they younger? You know, who are these people? Are they from out of town? Are they local? Do they ski midweek versus weekend? I know we were able to move a lot of weekend skiers to midweek, which was I think exciting this year. You know, what do they like about your trails? Do they like the short loops? Do they like the long loops? Do they like to go out, you know, to the top of the mountain and then ski back the same way? Again, this is like speak to them, encourage them to sign in if you have a guest book or leave a comment. Great way to get some feedback. You know, if they sign in, can you capture their email if you haven't already done that? And another great one is survey your guests. You know, SurveyMonkey is either inexpensive or free depending on the size of your list, and getting them to tell you in their words about their ski area is super important. That is kind of the presentation piece that I wanted to review here. I want to go now to the discussion of these retention ideas, and we're going to talk about, you know, incenting your customer to return, greeters and customers that several ski areas have employed, snow reporting, on-site destinations, unique programming, destination resorts. I got unique programming in there, sorry. Ski school programming, food, beverage, rentals, and retail. So let me share my screen. And again, there is a raise hand button. I don't think anyone's, oh, someone has. So let me just see if I can figure out who that is. Ah, Nate, you have a question.
Hey, Reese, I raised my hand earlier when you were saying that you kind of knew everybody on the call, and I'm sure everybody doesn't know each other. So I was just wondering, just as you kind of pan across the participant list, how many are left coast versus right coast on this call?
I mean,
Or by state, or you know, what's your feeling on who's here?
we have a pretty good cross section by state and Canada. I don't see any, from what I've seen so far, any one region that's represented more than another. So I think it's a pretty good group. We have a lot of new members and ski clubs that are on the call, which is a group that we
Cool.
That's exciting to have. So I'm pretty excited by the group that we do have. And sorry, I did not see your hand earlier. Did we answer your question? How do you unraise your hand?
Oh, I guess I have to do that part.
Okay, and like I said, we'd love to have this be kind of interactive. So feel free to raise your hand. And now that I can see it a little easier, I'll be able to hopefully find you and answer any questions. We talked about incentive to return, and I'm not sure how many people are really doing some kind of incentive program. And this has been kind of a discussion that we've talked about kind of off and on. And what everyone immediately goes to is you need to discount to bring them back. And I don't think that is the case. And I think as an industry, we should not be huge supporters of discounting. What we should be supporters of is how do you incent them to come back? Do you know, as I mentioned earlier, someone who takes that first lesson, looking at some of the data that I've seen, there are a tremendous number of people that come to to our ski areas and rent or, you know, and buy a day pass once. And then you don't never see them again. And we're going to talk about this a little bit more tomorrow on our technology piece. But that person is showing us that they're coming, that they're coming and that they're leaving and they're not coming back. So I would say, okay, we've done something that hasn't engaged them properly. Is there a way to get them to come back? We look at those, you know, if someone's coming in and renting a package, like, hey, do you want to get a card that gives you 3 days of complete skiing, you know, for the price of 2.5 days, something like that. So yes, you are giving them a bit of a discount, but it's more of an incentive to come back. Do you incent your regular guests to bring somebody? And keep that, you know, use that as a way to get people back. Nancy asked a question about showing the last slide. Nancy, I will post this on the website so you will have access to the complete deck. I'd rather not go back to that right now because then I lose my ability to control the screens. And season passes is one. And I wanted to ask Ellen Chandler from Jackson, because I know you're selling season passes right now. The season just ended. I believe you started selling your season passes before the season ended. Can you tell us a little bit about that program and how you're trying to incent that group to come back next year through your season pass sales?
Sure. We we call it a pre-season season pass program, and it has sort of two sides of it. One is we start selling them on March 1st, and if you buy it then and you don't have a season pass already, you can use it through the end of the year, which some years is a better deal than others, but because we closed a little earlier this year. But so that incents the new skier, and that's proven useful for people who are, they're predisposed to buying a season pass, but it's just too late in the year. But then we get them into the system, and it works really well. And we do, this isn't so much the marketing side, but the accounting side, we don't account for that money. That money doesn't count as a sale from my budget until next December, although obviously we have the cash. And the other side of that is we encourage existing season pass holders to buy their season pass for next year in March. And I think probably a number of people probably do that. It just gets you your cash flow a little earlier and means you don't have to bug those people over the summer. You can be talking to them about more soft sell stuff, just sort of encouraging them to think about cross-country skiing in Jackson over the summer. It frees up, almost 50% of our season passes come in at that time. So it is a good opportunity for us. And just sort of the dynamics of the last year, we only sold about 80% of what we had been expecting to sell or what was sort of budgeted to sell in March because of the pandemic. People were just being a little bit cautious. The good news is those people all did come back. I mean, I would say, I can't account for it person by person, but we did end up retaining, I would say, most of our season passes, and we ended up selling more season passes this past over as the season progressed, which was super helpful. And I think that probably everyone else had that same experience where the people who knew they wanted to ski, they really didn't want to come into the lodge, and the downhill skiers who knew they were going to be shut out of downhill skiing by the limitations on downhill skiing. So we did actually end up selling by February 28th, we were up about 20% in terms of season passes for the year, which was good. Then starting this March 1st, we rebounded to and actually exceeded where we had been selling for season passes in March. So the program is back on track. And the only bad thing is that all those people paid the lowest possible price for their season pass. So I have to, sell more passes next year to hit the budget. But I have time to do it.
Ellen, what percentage discount did you offer those season passes
at? Oh, they have a pretty good discount. It's almost 25%.
So significant. So
205 down to 160.
And this is something you've been doing for years?
About 5 years.
Right. So, does any... Sorry?
I did not dream this up.
Yeah. Does anyone have any other incentive programs that they have had success with? If you do, we'd love to hear from you. Sally.
Yeah, I know it's happened with a few ski areas, but we sold out of seasons passes the last 2 years, and that's definitely generated an interest and a rush and a sense of desperation to make sure you get your pass. It is a true sellout for us because we have parking capacity filled, but I know Royal Gorge had a similar approach, and they've actually sold out of their spring passes now. So they've done the approach of a cap number. So again, it just encourages people like I better get it because I don't know if I'm going to be able to buy one in the fall. So just another strategy there.
Oh, great. Lauren, you had a question? Oh, you're muted.
It wasn't a question. We have an incentive where we do 20% off in the month of October. And we had a great year with season passes. And so next year we might start selling this summer, actually start incentivizing people to buy early, do it a little different this year.
Right. Prevent them from buying down the street. So the earlier you sell those passes, the better.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on to greeters as a form of customer engagement. And this is something that I remember was mentioned in one of our conferences several years ago, actually from the previous or one of the previous people from Trapp Family Lodge. And you know, this is I've heard a lot of success stories from greeters. So Lauren, I want to go back to you because you and I did talk pretty extensively about your use of greeters over the past couple of years. I'd love to hear a little bit about how that helped with your customer engagement and also in terms of increasing your revenues.
It was really great this year. We use two greeters sometimes. Actually, Sam, who's on this call, was a greeter and he had a lot of fun doing it. The first line, the people coming in out of the parking lot would see a greeter within, 20 yards, and they could point people in the correct direction. We had three different rental areas this year because of COVID. So if people were unsure, they could right away find out which way to go. And once they came out of the building, they could make sure they had their passes on properly, or if they had a pass. If they didn't have a pass, they could tell them where they could pick up a pass and also direct them to a trail they might be looking for, help them with snowshoes or getting into skis. And it's amazing how many people thought they could just kind of waltz out and ski. And they were like, oh, yeah, that's right, a pass. So it was really helpful. And they could we had QR codes. So our greeters could help people scan their phones and also do contact tracing. So they could contact trace and buy their ticket right there. And then our greeters would have tickets in their pockets and could give them their tickets and help them put them on. So it took care of about 15 things that wouldn't have happened, until they got inside. Our occupancy limits were 10 people upstairs, 10 people downstairs, and 10 people in the yurt. So including staff, that didn't allow for too many. So it was just great having those two extra people right there. It was a little tough when it was freezing out, but they managed. Sam would have like 5 layers on and had a good time out there.
Would you use them all day? Or was it just for the high traffic areas like morning?
High traffic mainly, like sort of like 9:30-ish, 10 until about 2. And then when it started to slow down, they would phase out. But we'd kind of keep an eye out. We can see out the window, luckily, so we could see if people were having a problem. Right. But it was actually a really nice thing. And we hope we can do it next year and continue on because people were able to ask questions that they might not have asked inside. And it was great.
That's awesome. Nick Mahood, actually, I want to go back. Lauren, you had Sam, and you mentioned that the other person was a longtime employee and knew everything.
Yeah, Bill Hunt.
Yeah, knew everything about the property, which is super important. You don't want to throw kind of somebody new out there to answer questions because they may not have those answers. And so having somebody who has some good knowledge of the ski area is important. And to your point, and we'll come back to this, you got people to pay who may not have necessarily paid. So it's cost effective. Nick Mahood, you had a kind of an interesting, you have a staff member who is really good at kind of that customer engagement. Can you tell us a little bit about how you used him or how he was able to use himself to really help, really, really help you this year?
Sure. Thanks, Reese. We've got an older gentleman on our staff who's been with me for several years now. And he's been in the ski industry for 50-ish years and has a million and one stories and just a very outgoing and gregarious person who is within like 30 seconds, probably your best friend that you never knew you didn't have. And it's to the point now where I recognize how important his interactions with our customers are. And I really like what you said earlier, Reese, about engaging with your customers. Again, to the point where I really want to try to model his behavior and use this to help train staff in ways to interact with our guests. Because, while he's putting on your skis and helping you put on your snowshoes, and telling you where to go ski, he's telling you, 10 different stories about where he's been skiing. And this, it really does engage with the customer. And then when they come back, he's there to greet them when they come back and take their rental skis. And, And like if they had a blast, you know, and they really love the skis, he's the first one to point out to them. They can go inside and buy those skis right off the wall. And it's just, I think, it's a really interesting way to engage the customer and really get them involved and feel like they're someplace special. And I think that that's really important.
I think you also, not only does he tell people that they can buy, you know, the product inside, he's also told people when they're on the wrong equipment and, or whether, when they're on something that's really outdated and they're like, oh yeah, you can ski on that. I mean, but he's helping not only make their experience better, but also increase sales of other products that these guys didn't know that they needed, which I think is super cool also. So that's great. Richard Hodges, I know we had a discussion a long time ago and I didn't prep you for this, but I'm going to throw it at you anyway. Out at Mountain Dell, you guys employed greeters a little less for in customer engagement, but more to increase revenue. Can you speak to that just a little bit?
Yeah, at Mountain Dell, operated by Utah Nordic Alliance, we really started making an effort about 5 years ago because it was an honor-based fee system for the trail. And basically we forcibly recruited the parents of the junior skiers to become greeters. You know, saw 30, 40% revenue increases year over year just because somebody was there. Hey, do you have your pass? Have you purchased your pass? But it also has kind of evolved into an information booth, a place. We didn't do it this year, but prior years, sold season passes out of a little kind of tough shed booth there, and answer questions, because generally you end up with people that are volunteering that are skiers that have kind of that knowledge base to help people give beginners advice about where to go and where not to go on the trail. And so, you know, it started out as we need to start policing a little bit better, but then it turned into, hey, this is obviously a resource that people are craving, trying to get information out in the trail. Once they've already decided to go, it's like, oh, then what do we do? So it's been an interesting combination. And now, you know, we've got a bunch of families that do it on the weekends. They come out, hang out, kids go ski, mom and dad stay in a little shelter there, and then kids come and harangue people for passes and mom and dad go ski. So it's been a nice mix.
Thank you, Richard. It was pointed out, thank you, Doug, that I'm not introducing people properly. So Richard Hodges, who was just speaking about Mountain Dell, is the Nordic director for for White Pine Touring. He also owns 10 Week Winter and is a member of KISSA, and he's also the KISSA board chairman. So that was that. And then before that was Nick Mahood from Woodstock Nordic in Woodstock, Vermont. I think I introduced the others. So I think there's a great, looking at this greeter element, there's a great way to not only increase revenue because you're kind of encouraging people to not just slide onto the trail, but also providing a great service to your customer and making them feel loved, basically, and helping answer the questions that are on the tip of their tongue. So I think a really good thing. I remember a couple alpine ski areas out in Colorado, Copper Mountain specifically. They had people walking around with these big question marks on these signs that would go above the crowd, and they would walk around in their uniform. They were very easily identified. I don't think we need to do that, but I remember thinking that was a great idea. You could find this person and ask them a question. Great. I want to move on to snow reports. And, I definitely troll Facebook frequently to see what members are doing. And, you know, and I looked at, for many of you that I do follow, some great use of Facebook to talk about grooming for that day, something different than some of our grooming reporting operations. I want to ask Tracy Black from Wild Wings here in Vermont to tell us a little bit about how you used Facebook today for your grooming reports and what sort of feedback did you get from your guests?
I only use Facebook as a link. I use it as one of many things. I write a blog post every day. Every day. I write first, I do a ski conditions report, which is just a little square on the homepage. Then there's a spot to link onto that for a longer report. I try to include three or four pictures. If I can't go out and take one that morning, I try to use something that's representative of the current conditions. And then I just write, open. This is the temperature. This maybe was the temperature yesterday, and that's why it's affecting today's skiing. The more specific I can be, the more people like it. People really love anecdotal stories. They love to hear what went wrong last night. They love to hear what went right. They love to hear what Ian's, I can write exactly what's happening. This is what Ian's grooming. This is what machine he's using. Here's a picture of that machine. Here's a picture of what the tracks look like. Here's a picture of so-and-so skiing yesterday. Barney was doing that this year with his Instagram videos. It was really, that was good, Barney. But people love reading it. They can sign up on the website, on the blog site. They get to get that email every day. So that goes out and is an email every day to people who request it. It goes out on Facebook. I don't link that to Instagram very often, but we do try to do an Instagram post with a photo rep from that day, probably 5 days a week.
Awesome. And I think you said you really enjoyed writing those blogs every single day, and that you were sad that the season ended and you had to stop.
You know what? It's really hard to stop at the end of the year. It gets so old. You sit there at the computer. At one of the meetings, I think in February, there was another woman on here from, oh, maybe Idaho. I don't remember. And she was doing the same thing. And she said, you know, you're trying to write two paragraphs and it takes you an hour.
Yeah.
And I always, the shortest amount of time is the amount of time when I push publish and the amount of time that the website supervisor guy texts me to tell me what the mistake is that I made that day. This is what you need to go in and fix.
Right.
No matter how much I proof it, a typo goes out, a misspelled word, a bad sentence.
Yeah. And you're referencing Nancy Leon from Jackson Hole Nordic, who's also on this call. So yeah, no, she can commiserate.
It's so refreshing to hear someone else admit that it's not easy. Yeah. It should be simple, and it's not. Reese, can I share my screen? Chuck and I, back to what we were talking about before with greeters, Chuck and I worked in the parking lot this year. We were the greeters and we're the owners. And, oh shoot, just a second. I don't think it'll let me.
I'm not sure. Multiple participants.
Yeah. I don't think it'll let me. It won't.
Okay.
Never mind. We built a Lucy booth. And we had that in the parking lot. Information for skiing, get tickets here. I could write on the chalkboard, you know, this is what it looks like. That was really effective. It gave people, like when you were talking about somebody holding up that sign, it gave people a place to zero in on.
Destination. Yep.
So we tried to meet them at their car and explain exactly what was going on and what their options were if they hadn't done anything online.
Yep. Awesome.
Yeah, it was a lot of work, but it worked out well.
Great. Well, thank you, Tracy. You mentioned Barney, and actually I had him on my list because I was watching his Instagram grooming updates, shot from the cab of the cat each morning. So Barney, I see you there, you're driving, but yeah, share a little bit about that whole process.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we can hear you. This is Barney Hodges, the Nordic director from Reichert Nordic in Middlebury, Vermont, or outside of Middlebury.
Well, fortunately, I'm not driving, but I am on the side of the road, which is good. but it is fitting because I found this year I had a really hard time consistently getting reports out to our customers, and they really wanted to know what was going on. So I started shooting videos from the cab of the groomer, kind of live, and would try to work in. I'd keep it under a minute because I didn't know how to post otherwise. If it went over a minute, I lost my technical abilities on Instagram. So I'd keep it under a minute, and you know, it was so successful in terms of people looked forward to it, and it built momentum as the season went on, and you know, a lot of people were in our area where the valley doesn't always have a ton of snow, they forget how good the skiing is up in the mountains. And, you know, a lot of people would say to me, you know, at 10 o'clock after they'd seen the video and they're there, they're like, hey, we're here today because of that video. And I think videos are a little more interesting than still photos. And I'd always try to work in something funny without crossing the line. It's hard because people's sense of humor could be different. But maybe I thought it was funny and others didn't. But it was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it. And I think the customers did too.
That's awesome. And Chris Seymour, who's on from Van Hovenberg, also used some video. Chris, can you hear us? I think you're driving around the side of the road also.
I've made it home.
Ah, there you go. Excellent. Excellent. So, I mean, that was something I know Rebecca spoke about, your groomers actually taking Instagram pictures in the morning and doing some just interesting things back in the day. Is that something you're still doing, or are you just utilizing the video of that corduroy in the background?
It's a little of both. So similar to others, we do Facebook and Instagram updates every morning. And this year we started doing them kind of midday as well. And we found that it would often bring people out that were maybe reluctant or hadn't gotten off the couch yet. And then we do videos. Sometimes I do them, which very similar to the NCAT type ones. I'll ski out to a recognizable place, do a little video, ski for 10 seconds and sort of show what it looks like. And try not to cross any lines, but try to be funny. And we have a similar response. I often will have people who will walk in to the venue and they'll be like, oh, you're the video guy. I drove here today because of you. And I think it's been popular. We get a lot of positive comments, and I think in a lot of ways that, you know, it kind of humanizes or keeps us human. As you know, people can sometimes have a lot of opinions about grooming or whatever, and I think it keeps things really positive.
And I think we're going to come back to Chris a little later on some other pieces, but I think the takeaway here is that it is something that you can do that your customers are really going to enjoy and also provide a great service. So that video from the cat driver, the Nordic director or staff person every day is super, you know, super easy, takes a couple minutes and something. It really shows kind of the personal touch for your ski area. Let's move to on-site destinations. And we talked about this summer and looking at COVID and what could be done there. And one of the things that came up in a food and beverage conversation was these private igloos that you could purchase and utilize. And it actually started from the Alpine side, I think. And then we brought it over because it was a great discussion. Matt Sebastianski from Pineland Farms up in Maine actually bought several of these and really had a great experience. I'd love to hear, Matt, your experience with those igloos.
Sure. So, hello, everybody. Glad to see you all. We actually only purchased two domes. We purchased two, they're called garden domes. And they worked out really well. I think we were all in with building platforms at about $3,400. And we figured we'd try to rent them for $20 for an hour and see how it would go. We started on the 1st of January. We ran from January 1 to March 31st. We rented them 378 times. So it really got popular. It took a couple of weeks to catch on, but we put them on our social media page, got them out on Facebook, and people really took to them. Sometimes they'd be rented four or five times a day. So it was really nice. It was interesting to see the people that use them. You know, we have a market where people can come to eat. People would use those to stop and have lunch. A lot of moms would bring their kids so they could have a private indoor space. We built a new ice rink this year versus cleaning off our pond. And a lot of the people from the ice rink would come and drop their kids off. You know, the moms would hang out in the domes. So I think it was a really really nice. We even saw a couple of business meetings in the domes, which was really cool. So it just added a kind of a festive, fun outdoor space for people to use. And again, you know, pushing it on Facebook, it was great. You know, we ended up making almost $7,600 in renting them. So they paid for themselves plus. And it got a lot of people outside. So interestingly enough, I didn't see a lot of skiers using them. It was more the ancillary users of the property that really gravitated to them. People that came to use a sledding hill or the market or the ice arena, the ice rink. So it was interesting, but a lot of people, they got a lot of use. So we're actually looking at purchasing a couple more of those.
And Matt, did you pre-book those? So could somebody book one for Saturday morning today or, you know, something like that? Did you have a an advance ready?
We did. We actually put a, you know, when you call the market, you've got a menu. So to get a sandwich, you know, press one, to rent a dome, press two. It was really popular. We only took them by reservation. So it's the only way that we could make sure that we had time between users to keep them clean. You know, we ventilated them for 15 minutes. We wiped everything down and try to keep them as sterile as possible.
Right. Thank you, Matt. I want to move to Lauren Stagnitti from Trap. They, of course, have their iconic cabin that we've talked about many times. But you were, I know when you and I spoke earlier, you guys were concerned about letting people into it, but you did come up with a creative way to use that cabin. Can you share that with us?
Sure. We used the cabin two different ways this year. We did takeout service, which was great. We purchased a fire pit for outside and brought some benches up so people could ski up, knock on the door, and there was a board outside, and they could give the cabin keeper their order. So they'd make sandwiches or hot drinks or whatever, and so people could sit outside and eat. But we also rented it. There were four slots a day. You could rent from 11 to 11:50, 12 to 12:50, up until 3 o'clock to 3:50. And we started doing online rentals this year, but we added the cabin as part of our rental so people could rent online and set up a reservation for the cabin for a particular time. And it was really fun. People loved it. And the cabin keeper, if you skied up, he'd let you in, and then he would make you your lunch or whatever you wanted or needed. And some people rented it for 2 or 3 hours and they had it for a whole block of time. But it was a great way for us to be able to keep the cabin open during COVID. And the people that were outside were really, nobody seemed to be bothered. You know, everybody was pretty happy from our end. We didn't get any negative press on that. So it was really fun to be able to do that.
Yeah. And something you'll probably continue this next year. Perhaps.
I'm not sure how that'll work out because part of it is if we're allowed to have people in, we might get more people that'll be questioning why they can't get in. But I guess that'll be up for discussion. I'm not sure how that'll go. But right. But we will also, we've rented it in the evenings for parties, like some people want to ski up and have a birthday party and bring their friends up. So we'll definitely be doing rentals like that. But it was, at first I wasn't sure it was going to go, and it was a really good success. We had rentals right through. So it was fun.
That's awesome.
Can I jump in real quick, Reese? Yep. Just one thing on that front as well was that we did make sure our cabin keepers knew that they had license to, if they saw miserable cold people outside, if they saw a family having a difficult experience, say, look, bring them in. If no one else had the cabin rented. So it was important to us for safety to keep the cabin operating, but it was also nice that our cabin keepers could use their judgment if they wanted to invite someone in to warm up and make sure that some family didn't have an unpleasant experience because of not being able to come inside. So it was nice to give them that license to be generous.
Awesome. And that was Sam Von Trapp from Trapp Family Lodge. I want to go to Nick Mahood from Woodstock again, because Nick, you guys had a warming cabin. I think it's the old tennis shack or whatever, and you had some success with that just as like an easy destination. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, that was new for us this year, taking over that space, and it is literally right on a trail. It's 2.5 kilometers from the Nordic Center. It's pan flat to get there, so, and it's a trail that, you know, anybody, if they're out skiing, is going to probably go by, even the, you know, somebody that's never skied before can make it out that far. And that was, we served soup and chili and whatnot out of that on the weekends, but we had a fire pit out. It was just sort of a nice destination, you know, very similar to what everybody else is saying and doing. And we will certainly keep that moving forward. I think it's nice to have somewhere to send people, and it enhances the experience.
Yeah, no, that's great. I want to go now to Mount Van Hoverberg again, to Chris. We had actually KISSA had their annual conference up at Van Ho 2 years ago, I guess the last one before COVID hit. And these guys had just built repurposed a building as a Waffle House. Chris, can you tell us a little bit about how, you know, any successes you had with that since it's been open?
Yeah, the Waffle House, we had a tree fall on what was actually an old DEC bathroom. And so we replaced the roof and then renovated it into Josie's. It was not open this year. We weren't able to with guidelines do that. But for us, it has become, I think, kind of our center of hospitality. And we often refer to it as the heart of Mount Van Hoverberg. And so, yeah, it's especially weekends and holidays. We have a lot of destination people who will head out there for, you know, that somewhat iconic winter experience. And it's a little over a kilometer from our new lodge to get there. And it's not quite pan flat, but pretty close to get there. And we have a simple menu. We have fresh waffles that we make. There's simple toppings, maple syrup from the facility is there, hot drinks. And we find with a lot of folks, especially young families and or older couples, is they will hurry out there, claim a spot. And we also have outside two fire pits that are always going on the weekends and holidays. And those times especially, it's busy. The other thing that we have done with success there pre-COVID was we would station musicians, speakers, local scientists out there, and we had a published schedule that we'd go into the season with. And we found a lot of people really liked it. I mean, we on our first year open, we actually had Joe Pete Wilson that we stuck out there on a number of weekends, and he told his stories. But it's been, that part of it has been really nice. And we actually worked out trade agreements with people that did it, where a lot of the folks that we brought in were not necessarily cross-country skiers, but we kind of incentivized it with a family pass. And we found that, you know, with them and association, we were gaining a number of people as part of our community. And yeah, it's been nothing but wonderful for us.
Awesome. And I think the takeaway here is, and we've talked about this at various conferences in the past, as well as over the summer, excuse me, these destinations, be it cabins or fire pits or scenic outlooks or picnic tables somewhere, are really a great asset to your ski area. People love to have a goal to get to somewhere or a reason to get to somewhere, be it a mountaintop or, like I said, a scenic outlook or something else that's unique. And so another thing that you can talk about with your guests and remind them, hey, ski out here, to differentiate yourself. I want to move to this category of unique programming. And there are a couple really interesting things that I heard over the past couple of years, and specifically this year. And I want to start with Gene Dayton from Breckenridge. He's been running cat tours with his Prenoth Bubble Cats, a cat that actually he brought to one of our annual meetings. I'm trying to think where it was. Must have been Snow Mountain Ranch, where we all got to ride around in it, in their kind of bubble back, and kind of do that experience. Gene, are you, I haven't seen you on here. Are you with us here?
I'm not sure that he is. I'm his son, Josh.
Oh, hey, Josh. No worries.
I don't see him or my mom on here at the moment, but I'd be happy to speak to that race.
Oh, please do.
Yeah, we've been operating the Bubble Cats on our Prinoth Huskies for, I believe, 5 years now. And it's grown immensely with COVID. We stopped doing group tours this year and just started doing private tours. The cab, if you've been in it, is completely separate from the driver's area. And it seats up to 8 people. And we've had a few more than that in there at a time, but it definitely, with like babies and lap children, but it definitely tends to get a little bit much with more than 8. We take them out for about 45 minutes and we have hot chocolate and schnapps. We stop at a little destination cabin and we share stories of the history of the area, the wildlife. It's a bit of a wildlife guided tour. If we happen to see any moose in the area, it's always a wonderful opportunity. And it brings in people that are not skiers. They're not snowshoers. They're not looking for any kind of an endurance activity. They're looking for a very soft, easy adventure, and it allows people from all generations to get together. We were running those at about $600 per tour, and we could run up to 4 tours in the afternoon. We started doing some morning tours as well. That would allow us to get some extra grooming in early season or early in the day. We were doing those a little bit less expensively, just to get some different people involved that weren't gonna spend $600 on a cat tour. And then we've been able to do some sunset type tours too. And all of our drivers love doing them. It's a great opportunity for them to get out. And if they're more charismatic groomers, it works perfectly. And if they're less charismatic, then it becomes less of a guided tour and more of a ride along. But the goal is just to try to get more people out into the area that might not be able to see it on skis or snowshoes. And the other thing too with the cats is they have rubber tracks that are great in low snow conditions. And they're actually designed to work in dry conditions. So if you had a season where it was a complete bust as far as snow goes, you could still operate your tours, and as long as your land agreements worked for that. Awesome. It's been a very good success for us.
And there is on the KISSA website under latest news, Gene sent a piece that kind of detailed it out. I believe you have 3 cats and all of them have bubbles on them now. And he did share the numbers, and I think they're in that thing, but you're bringing in upwards of $200,000 in tour fees, and you're really just using the cats to groom that you would be paying to do anyway. So it's proven to be very economical. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's one of our largest line items, and I'm sure one of the largest line items for most Nordic centers is operation of a grooming machine. The cost is excruciating for a lot of Nordic centers, and always has been. But it's one way to offset that cost and allow the snow cats to even pay for themselves. We traded in our 3rd cat, which didn't have a bubble on it this year, and we're able to trade it in for a cat with a bubble. And so we were able to operate more tours, including some of those morning tours this season. And I think it really is the only way that those machines can be viable with as expensive as they are getting.
No, that's awesome. Gene, did you jump on? I thought I saw someone possibly come in. I don't know if he had anything to add.
Therese is on here.
Oh, okay. Welcome, Therese. There's also, just separate from the Prinoths, some of the smaller cats that are KISSA members now are also have some cabin elements. So I know for some of the ski areas where your trails may be a little narrower, there could be other options that might fit. But a really interesting I think a really interesting way to create a revenue stream that you probably didn't have. And as I said, I believe many of the economics to running that are in the article that Gene wrote, and it is in the latest news on the KISSA website. So I encourage everyone to take a look at that if you haven't already done so. I want to move to Adam Dillard from Jackson Forks Ranch. They created an ice bar, an outdoor ice bar this year. And Adam, hopefully you're here. I'd love to hear a little bit more about that. I know you and I had a conversation a few weeks ago about it. Adam?
Yes. So the whole thing started because we were approached about using our ranch as a fat tire biking trail for the winter. And we had explored – you hear me okay?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. We had explored doing this ice bar for private use, basically exploratory purposes for resort that we're talking about building here on the ranch, and got approached on this fat tire bike trail. That got presented to the owner, and then the owner's like, well, let's just build the ice bar. And this was all October 1st with not much of a plan. So it all came together quickly. We were kind of changing a week at a time, and to speak to some of the what you guys have brought up, we ended up with the ice bar, obviously, which was a huge attraction. We put in a teepee that was a warming hut, brought in a tiny house, and we used that as a warming hut as well as a ladies' room, and put in an ice skating rink that was more for curling. A few people did use it for ice skating, and then we had about 10 miles of cross-country ski trails. And ended up, it was all single track. So we had guests along the way say, hey, this is not wide enough for skate skis. So then we added an additional three. So we ended up with somewhere in the neighborhood of like 10, 11, 12 miles total on the ranch. So it was a little bit of everything. We had, I'd say on a busy day, we were probably bringing 25 people in just on the ski course. And then the bar itself was, I think our high was close to 200 on a Saturday.
Wow. So again, a kind of a creative way to expand your offering that doesn't include like tubing or something like that. Really, really interesting. I want to go to Nate Harvey from Great Glen. Nate, you guys are, I believe, owners of the Mount Washington Auto Road, and you run tours up there year round, but specifically in the winter, you've got vans with tracks. Can you talk to us a little bit about how that works for bringing people in?
Yeah. If anybody else had access to their own private 8-mile road to the summit of Mount Washington with 4,500 vert, this would be a great opportunity to make some money. But it is privately owned. The snow coaches are custom four-wheel drive vans. So they're 12-seaters that we would use in the summertime. We've just outfitted them with tracks that would travel to treeline for safety reasons on Mount Washington, which has the worst weather in the world. So we get off on that. It doesn't always have to be sunny to have a good time up there. And it's a sightseeing tour. And we, you know, just like the folks that showed up to the ice bar, most of them aren't skiers. This is something anybody can do. It has been bookable online for the last, I don't know, 8 years. We had to cut our numbers down in half, basically, to what we could allow on the coach due to COVID. But we figured out how to do it and made some money at it again.
Awesome. Awesome. We've actually, I was actually
Reese, in. Reese, before you take off on me, and maybe you'll come back or something, but I just, it is a bummer that we can't all get together. I just wanted to say to the group that I am on the board, have been for 4 or 5 years, and I've ridden in that bubble cat. That morning schnapps is incredible. I wanted to comment on Nick's codger or his older gentleman. You know, we have the same kind of, I didn't even think about it until Nick was talking about this ambassadorship. We've got a guy on the tubing hill that just sort of is there as a attendant, but he tells these North Country stories, and we have more trip advisors on this guy than we have on the whole center. So these ambassadors are pretty important people. And I can't wait to see you guys in person and just kind of have those after hours talks that I'm out on.
Yeah, Nate actually brings up a great point, because usually at our conferences, there's a lot of social time where we spend time together, not talking about really structured conversation, and it is great fun. So good point there. And speaking of Nick, let's go back to Nick Mahood from Woodstock. And Nick, you've got some really cool kids programs and holiday programs. Can you just briefly top line some of those and the successes you've had in getting people to come back to participate?
Sure. Yeah. Thanks, Reese. Yeah, being part of a large resort, we do get a lot of families. And even this season with COVID travel restrictions, we still had a lot of families. And it's really important if we're sending them out skiing or snowshoeing that we might have something for the families and for the kids in particular to actually do other than say, go ski over here on these trails. And so right kind of immediately on the trails right outside the door, we've got an animal tracking trail. You get a punch card at the center and you can go out and you basically find these stations, which are these really cool hand-painted wooden signs with various animals on them. And you punch the punch card when you find each of them alongside the trail. And then on the back of the punch card, there's a little bit of, it shows what the animal's track looks like and a little bit of information about each of those animals. We also added this year a storybook trail, for lack of a better word. We took the book Trouble with Trolls, which is a little bit about skiing or has skiing in it. And basically each page was a station and the families and the kids would travel around to each and read the book as they go, which was on probably about a little under a kilometer loop. That was really, really popular, which was kind of cool to see. And then I think the other thing Reese is referring to, we normally do a Valentine's Day race and the local ski club, puts all these beautiful hand sewn, cloth hearts out on the trails. And this year we ended up having them do it for the whole month of February. And we got more comments on the hearts hanging from trees around the trails than a lot of other things. I think people just found a lot of, joy and excitement in that. And so I guess it's really important, I think, just to have the skiing be an experience and try to enhance that experience other than just go out and go skiing for a lot of guests. A lot of people just want to go hammer around the trails, but I think for a lot of people, and this goes back again to engaging the guests. That hit it, Reese?
Yep. No, that was perfect. Thanks, Nick. So yeah, there's a lot of cool programming that ski areas are doing. You know, we just touched on a couple ideas and I know there's many, many more, but something to think about when you look at your ski area and you look at your value proposition, it's like, what can you do? I know maybe buying a new bubble cat isn't going to happen this year, but what can you do to offer something that's unique to your ski area and something that's fun, be it for the families or the singles or, you know, any of the guests that you have? Let's move to ski school here now. And PSIA has always talked about how a more proficient skier will have more fun skiing and will likely come back more often. So that's a big part of their kind of talking points, is it's important to teach your skiers. I know this year, this summer, we talked about what kind of an opportunity we were going to have for our ski school this year with all of these new skiers. And I know a lot of people did some great things with their instructors. And I heard both from cross country and Alpine this year that they did employ a variety of different things. I want to go back to Richard Hodges from White Pine Touring in Utah, because I know, Richard, you guys are an active center and, you always had a very active ski school, but this year you hired more instructors and you had to change your plan. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. Yeah. I'm just laughing, thinking back on the season of a very sketchy snow year, the city building a water treatment plant on part of our course and COVID, and turning out that we had a pretty darn good year. We decided early on that due to, you know, public health and COVID, that we were not going to do any group lessons at all for the season. And so we switched everything over to private lessons, picked up another couple of instructors, and really just told people that this is going to be what it is. And so basically we had success by charging people more money for their lessons. But the thing you get with a private lesson is we were providing a much better product for customers. You know, the one-on-one or family, family group with one instructor is a much better lesson than kind of a random thrown together group lesson in every circumstance. And so anecdotally, what we had was numerous people coming back and doing two or three lessons during the week, or doing a lesson, then coming back and skiing three more days while they were, you know, visiting Park City on vacation. And I mean, the numbers kind of show that, group lessons were down 99% for, year to year comparison, because some people had pre-booked online and we just honored the pricing on that. But overall, our private lessons were up 100%. So by charging more, we did really well. I've been running through the numbers kind of now that the year is over and taking a look at it, and we could have had a horrifically bad year because tourism was down so much. Destination tourism was down, almost 40% in the community. And I think that's reflected because our snowshoe rentals were down, 30% year over year comparison. And snowshoeing is kind of that entry level activity for people that maybe haven't experienced snow before. So we could have had a horrific year. And instead, with a shorter season, with worse snow, we netted out, 100% of what we did the year before on a much longer, very good year. But we did it by improving what we did. I can't say enough about how excited the instructors were to have kind of individuals or small groups. They felt they could better use their skills in, kind of one-on-one teaching. They got paid a little bit more for doing a private than for doing a group. The customers were thrilled with the quality of what they were getting. And we did see repeat business and people. I've yet to see like a huge retention from any kind of group cross-country ski activity in any context. If somebody's got some numbers, let me know. But I really look at the ability to provide a high quality experience from a skilled instructor to somebody to turn them, into a skier or at least a repeat customer. We did have a lot of folks come in, they'd rent, they'd get a lesson, they'd come back and say, oh yeah, this is my new sport, I'm going to do it. And they'd come in and buy, $2,000 worth of gear off the wall. And it didn't happen every day, but it certainly happened enough to make it worthwhile. And that was the focus. And, looking down the road, unless something really radical happens, I don't think we're going to be offering group lessons anymore.
Well, I think from what I'm hearing is just the quality of the lesson is that much better. The guest has that much more, or learns that much more. And, it's a win-win for everyone. And I'm hearing that on the Alpine side also.
It is. And it also gave us an opportunity for, say, more experienced skiers to come in and really get a finesse lesson, a high level lesson that they normally wouldn't have gotten. The other thing it did is also shifted us into basically sold out lessons 7 days a week. It wasn't just weekend demand anymore. I mean, weekends would fill up typically by, Tuesday afternoon, Wednesday morning. The weekend would be gone in terms of lessons. And people would just say, okay, I'll come on Thursday. And so those, the weekdays would fill up immediately after that if they weren't full already. And so we ended up offering, just as many lessons, but doing it in a way, actually, it's not true. We offered twice as many lessons this year. We had twice as many lessons overall with the privates than we did with the groups last year.
Crazy. And I think also to add on to that, there's so many other programming, other like instructional program you could do, like master's clinics and women's clinics and kids things, which is where I want to go next is to the preschool ski school from George Davis. I'm not sure if he's on. George, are you on the call here? I didn't see him come on, but he's got an interesting thing where he's engaging the 3 to 5 year olds, anyone who can walk and basically get into his program. He's got equipment. He runs it at a ski area, but also has a road show that goes to, you know, community centers or anyone else that has some snow. And what I think is so interesting about it is he's engaging those kids really early and engaging their parents because they've got to come with someone. And many of the parents also participate in the lesson, especially this year. And he finds that those parents then become, take their own lesson later and become skiers. So it's a really interesting, way to kind of open up to a new category of people that generally we would stray away from, but engage them really young, get them into cross-country skiing as that toddler, and get their parents involved. So another way he was on a call this summer with us. He was supposed to be here, but must have gotten laid off somewhere. So I apologize for that. Another thing that Roger Lohr mentioned from, I haven't seen Roger on this call either, but he had a skier achievement card that he talked about at our last retention call. And that was something that could be given to your skiers. Roger's here. Roger, do you want to speak briefly about your skier retention card? Perhaps if you unmute.
I think I've done enough of these. I should be. That came out of Mountain Meadows originally, I believe. There's a little card that had the different techniques on them, and you literally can go up, you know, you can use it for a lesson, but you can also just go around the ski area and help people who are having problems, which, by the way, the minute they come out of the lodge, you can tell if somebody doesn't know how to put the straps on or can't put the skis on. That's a big part of an ambassador's job, too, to help those people, to give them a positive entry. But the achievement card, then, you know, you have your name on it and you circle, oh, you need to work on your double poling or whatever. You know, you have all the different techniques exemplified on the card. And maybe that includes some type of incentive to go get a lesson. Well, I was talking about incentives. I don't know if we talked about the buddy thing with season passes. But I know when I was getting a season pass, it was always 10. You can bring 10 people during the year and they got half off or something like that, to use the pass that you've already sold to try to get more people to come. I noticed that Reichert is giving free lessons if you buy a pass, to people who buy a pass. So that whole incremental activity of an existing customer is another way to really help get people more enthusiastic.
That's awesome. Thanks, Roger. Let's move now. We're running a little long here, so I apologize for that. And I want to finish up with food and beverage. And I know this is a tough point or a tough discussion point for many, many areas where they don't feel like they have a kitchen, they don't have a chef, they don't have the staff, all of that. But I feel it's really important to create that entire experience. And we talked a little bit about that earlier. I want to bring in Sally Jones from the Tahoe Donner Cross Country Center. Her ski area sends out these pictures of their food via Instagram. It seems like all the time. And, you know, over the last 2 years, I've looked at these foods, and really the number one reason I want to go back to Tahoe Donner is for the food experience. But Sally, this obviously wasn't a great food year, but tell us a little bit about your dining room there and you know, what sort of successes you've had with really keeping people engaged through food.
Yeah, we're super fortunate to have a spectacular building, which includes a year-round restaurant. Able to usually post-COVID or pre-COVID, being able to do a kind of a full-plated lunch, dinner. Excuse me one sec. Hey, guys, can I? We're able to – we've got a chef and we've got food servers, so it's like coming into a restaurant and sitting there and watching people go ski by. I think it really does help us with raising the bar, especially when the weather turns good, which it often does in California, and people can hang out outside around the fire pits and have a beer with lunch. It's really a, you know, great experience for people that makes it more than just the skiing. We've also had success. I know we're not talking about new skiers, but definitely people coming in for lunch and get curious about what else is happening here. All those people look like they're having fun out there. So I'm sure we've gained a few extra skiers through just that, luring them in for lunch and then being able to get them out on skis. So yeah, I think really just the ambiance and the opportunity to have a great lunch in a great venue is definitely helping us retain our skiers.
Do you see people coming from your alpine area to eat at your place, or do they have equally spectacular food?
We used to, a lot of the staff used to come over. However, we have a new food and beverage director who's upped the bar. So I'm hoping he comes over here and ups us even more. They've been doing a skirt steak on the barbecue with the smell of onions and mushrooms across the deck. So they've actually been having a lot of success over there this year with a change in their menu.
Awesome. Thank you, Sally. The people from Crested Butte Nordic cannot be with us today, but they have a yurt dinner, which they say is a lot of work for them to manage, but really effective in bringing people in for the first time and keeping their group engaged. So that's super interesting. And then I want to just also mention the Craftsbury in Vermont has some, you know, very simple kitchen that has, you know, really some basic homemade food, soups and brief sandwiches that, again, people will come and ski and then stay and eat and hang out, which I think is super important. We're approaching 4:30, so I think I want to call it there. Are there any other questions from anyone? I like this question, this live question thing. I think that was kind of fun. But if there's no more, I'll wrap it up. Thanks everyone for coming today. I hope this has been a worthwhile discussion on retention, that you've learned some takeaways. I will post that deck that I showed earlier on the website, probably later in the week, so you will have access to that. Special thanks to our panel who spoke, and some of those that I called on that I didn't actually tell you that I was going to call on you. So I appreciate that. Tomorrow's topic is how to better use technology to gather data and reduce costs. This is certainly a topic that we spent some time on this summer, especially when everyone was all about touchless everything. You couldn't interact with the guests at all. When this COVID thing was really in its infancy, I think we've learned a lot about COVID and how we can interact, but there is definitely some really, really great technological advances, that will help our businesses, not only in reducing costs, but also to better understand our customer. We did talk about that a bit today. So that will be great. That is tomorrow. And please remember the silent auction. I did not post that link, but it is. I will make sure I send it out tomorrow. You will get a new login for tomorrow's call, so you will not use the same one. And unless there's any other questions, I will say have a great afternoon, everyone, and I look forward to seeing you all tomorrow.